Thanks very much, everyone, for attending. It's my great honor and great pleasure to be here to talk to you today about our recent work at the intersection of machine learning and quantum physics, where I'll talk specifically about the use of, like, the intersection of how we can use language models for studying topological order. But first of all, I would like to thank the organizers of this this conference for the kind invitation, and I would like also to thank my collaborators, Juan and Roger, who deserve a lot of credit for this work that was posted recently on archive. So I think a good place to get started is from the fact that conventional phases of matter can be described by local order parameters that stems from typically from the Landau symmetry breaking theory, where you can, for instance, distinguish between a ferromagnet and the paramagnet using the local order parameter. But it turns out that's not the whole picture. Like, you can also have some other phases of matter where you don't have this picture, where you need to look at the whole system in order to see the global pattern. And you might ask yourself why this is interesting. It's something that turns out to be involved in a lot of aspects of physics. For instance, you'll encounter topological order if you want to study fractional Hall quantum Hall effects. This is also something very interesting for the future generation of fault-tolerant quantum computers that are based on topological qubits. And it's also something that's inherent to quantum spin liquids that are heavily studied in computational and numerical theoretical condensed matter. And what's also interesting about topological order is that recently there was a lot of experimental realizations of topological order, namely in Rydberg atoms arrays and also in superconducting quantum processors. And the goal of this talk is, one way to motivate the goal of this talk is to see how machine learning can assist us in the long-term goal of realizing and investigating topological quantum order. And in this talk, I'm going to try to answer one aspect of this question, where we're going to see how we can use neural network quantum states for detecting topological order. And I'll specifically focus on one historic architecture in language models, namely the recurrent neural network, as a way to detect topological order. So to do this, in the first part of this talk, I'll give a brief overview about recurrent neural networks. And then the second part, I'm going to show you how we detect topological order. And then the last part, I'm going to show you some promising results we obtained on some prototypical topological quantum systems. So let's get started with a brief overview about recurrent neural networks. So the reason why we use language models in our study is that these kind of share the difficulty that we have when we study quantum systems, which is the curse of dimensionality. So for instance, if you look at the complexity of generating, let's say, a paragraph of 30 words, and let's assume that you only have a language that's made of only 1,000 words, then the total complexity is much larger than the number of atoms in our known universe. So the curse of dimensionality in language modeling is as challenging as what we have in quantum many-body physics. And yet, language models can still do very well, as you all know. So for instance, ChatGPT and GPT-4 can achieve close to human performances on a lot of language modeling tasks. And in this talk, I'll focus on one of the historic architectures, the recurrent neural network, that enabled interesting advances in speech recognition and machine translation. And also, in theory, they are known to be universal approximators. And what's interesting about RNNs is that we can also adapt them from use cases in natural language processing to use cases in many-body physics by, instead of feeding words, we can instead feed in spins or physical degrees of freedom. And what makes RNNs very powerful is this powerful sampling scheme called autoregressive sampling, where RNNs can allow us to compute conditional probabilities that can allow us to sequentially sample our configurations. So for those who are not familiar with RNNs, the basic way RNNs works in a high-level idea is that you initially take some neural network or some black box that I'm going to explain in a second that outputs some initial vector h1 that allows us to compute the probability, let's say, of computing, of getting the first spin. So what we do is we sample from this probability, which will give us either a spin up or a spin down. Let's assume, for instance, we get spin up. In this case, what we do is we feed in this vector h1 and sigma 1, and then this allows us, through this same block, to compute this vector h2, which is can be computed in the simplest way using this recursion relation. In practice, we use something that's more complicated than that, but just for the sake of simplicity, what we do is we concatenate h1 and sigma 1, and then we multiply with a weight matrix, we add a bias, and we use a nonlinear activation function, and that allows us to compute h2, and this motivates the use of like naming this state as a memory state because it kind of memorizes information about the past of the previous spin configurations, and that's why we can use it to compute the conditional probability of getting the second spin based on the status of the previous one. And we do this using a softmax layer with additional weights and biases. And the use of the softmax is in such a way that this is a normalized probability. And here, the weights and the biases are actually the parameters that we tune during the optimization. So basically, all we need to do is keep carrying out this generation of spins until we get our full spin configuration, whose probability is given by, according to the chain rule, by the product of the conditionals, which we can interpret as the module squared of what we can call an RNN wave function. And this is interesting because we can repeat this sampling procedure many times to get a lot of samples. And the samples we get are exactly independent. And because they are independent, we can get those samples in parallel. And this allows us to do very efficient, important sampling in order to compute our observables, in particular, to compute the energy expectation value in our RNN wave function using the samples we generate using importance sampling. And this sampling scheme is also very desirable because it can allow us to jump back and forth between different maxima of the distribution defined by our RNN. And this is very helpful in this work because it can allow us to switch back and forth between topological sectors, as we're going to see in the next few slides. So basically, after introducing all these ingredients, all we need to do is initialize the parameters of our RNN and then optimize using the variational Monte Carlo scheme until we achieve convergence, where we hopefully expect to get some good approximation of our ground state and the ground state energy of our Hamiltonian of interest. Now, since we're interested in studying two-dimensional systems that have topological order, the question was how we can use RNNs to study those systems. So the first idea we can think about is to try to snake through the 2D lattice using a one-dimensional recursion relation. But the issue that you might see from this approach is that if you look, for instance, at this site and this site, they are not strongly correlated to each other. So as information might get diluted as you go through the recursion relation. So one simple fix to this that was also introduced or motivated in the machine learning literature is to introduce also some vertical messages or to also send vertical memory states instead to forego the use of the 1D recursion relation and use a two-dimensional recursion relation in order to efficiently encode the structure of the two-dimensional lattice in our RNN. And in order to sample the configurations, there are like multiple paths that we can go through, but one convenient path that we found was the zigzag path as indicated by these dashed arrows and also as shown in this animation over here. And so since also we are studying systems that have periodic boundary conditions, We thought also about using about also adding these extra recurrent connections, because if you look at this site and this site, in principle, they are correlated to each other, but in the architecture, they are not. So we thought about also adding these extra connections, which were also helpful in helping the convergence of our calculations. Now, after introducing all these ingredients that we use in our RNN, let's see how we can detect topological order using these tools. So it turns out that the one way to detect topological order is using what's called topological entanglement entropy based on entanglement entropy, which is, as you can guess, a non-local measurement that we do in our system. And if you take a given quantum system and you divide it into two parts, A and B, where you have the length of a boundary is L, and assuming that this system has area low, then the topological entanglement entropy corresponds actually to the subleading term to the area low. And what we do in our experiments is that we actually compute the second Rennie entropy, which turns out to be computable using a trick called the swap trick that is detailed in this reference. So I'm not going to go through that, but this is the whole idea. We use the swap trick, and what we do is one way to recover this topological entanglement entropy is to do a finite size scaling for different sizes of the boundaries, and then to do an extrapolation until you find some value of this topological entanglement entropy gamma. And another way to extract this gamma is through other constructions. So typically, one construction is called the Kitaev-Preskill construction, which consists dividing the bulk of the system into three regions, A, B, C, and then taking different combinations of entanglement entropies in order to recover this value of gamma, given that these regions are large enough to suppress finite size effects. So now, after showing you how we can detect topological order, now let's see some practical results that we obtained in our experiments. So the first prototypical model we used was the Torrey code, which is the standard model for studying topological order. So here in the Hamiltonian, we have two kind of terms. So we have the sum of Plaquette terms, where we have fins that are located on the dual square lattice. And so we have the sum of Plaquette terms, and we also have sum of vertices terms. And it turns out that the ground state of this Hamiltonian has Z2 topological order, meaning that the topological entanglement entropy is exactly equal to log 2. So in order to extract this value in using our RNN, what we did is we took our lattice, which is a torus, and we divided it into two, meaning that we'll divide our torus into two cylinders, as you can see over here. And because we have two boundaries between A and B, then we'll have two contributions of gamma. So instead of only log 2, we expect to get 2 log 2. And so we did the experiment for different system sizes. So the first thing you can see over here is that we see a very nice linear scaling, which means that our RNN supports the 2D area law. And what's also interesting is that we recover a non-zero value for gamma when we do the extrapolation, but this value is not equal to 2 log 2, but instead equal to log 2. So this was like intriguing in the beginning when we found this about this result, but after we were thinking about this, we found a very nice explanation for why this happened. This is because the RNN actually finds what's called a superposition of different topological states. So it turns out that if you're dividing your torus into two cylinders, those cylinders are actually non-contractible regions. So if you have non-contractible regions, it turns out that the topological entanglement entropy is actually not equal to gamma, but actually there is also another term which depends on the superposition in your of the top logical sector. So if your wave specifically if your quantum state is a superposition of what's called minimal entangled states, where these probabilities are actually the squares of these alpha terms here, then you'll have a non-zero value here. Specifically, you'll have a negative contribution that will lower your topological entanglement entropy. And the reason why it's called these states are called minimally entangled is that if you have only one of these p's are one, then this term is zero, and you'll have the lowest entanglement entropy among the other states. Now, in order to find out that our RNN actually finds a superposition of different topological sectors, we analyzed the Wilson loops and also the Itoft loops in our lattice. So the why using the Wilson loops? Because the Wilson loops allows us to distinguish, or the Wilson loops are originally used to label the different topological sectors. So when we computed it, the expectation value of this Wilson loop, we found this value, which means that we have a superposition of different sectors because we like each sector has plus one or minus one. So which means if we find the average, that assumes that we found an average or like a superposition. We also computed the Itoft loops, which are given by these green loops over here. And we also find this value, and by doing the analysis, at the end, we found that our RNN wave function is actually a superposition of two different minimally entangled states. And by using the formula I shown you in the previous slides, we found exactly the value that we expect in our numerical experiments. That was actually a nice thing to see, that we have an agreement between what we expect in the theory and also from the experiments. And also another thing we tried is to use now in contractible regions as dictated by the Kitaev-Preskill construction, where we use these regions in order to compute the gamma. And here, since the regions are contractible, we don't have to worry about the topological sector superposition. So here we found exactly, like we found the values within error bars for gamma for different system sizes. So that was a good benchmark for our RNN architecture on this model. After we did this, we went to a harder model, which is the Bose-Hubbard model and the Kagame lattice, where here where the system has hardcore bosons, which means that we either have one occupation or zero occupation. And this the Hamiltonian of this model has two terms. The first one promotes the is a kinetic term that promotes the transition of hardcore bosons to the neighbors. And we also have a potential term that encourages configurations like these, where if you have three hardcore bosons in each hexagon, then you have no energy penalty. And if that's not the case, then you'll pay an energy penalty that's proportional to this factor V. And as you might guess, like if V is very large, then you'll have a lot of constraints in your system, as we have for the Torrey code. And it turns out that for values of V larger than this threshold, then we have Z2 topological order. So we tried to see if that's the case in our experiments. So we computed the topological entanglement entropy using this a partition of our system using the Kitaev-Preskill construction. And it turns out that for very large values of V, we found an agreement with log 2, as we expect from the results I've shown you in the previous slide. So that was a very interesting result to see as well for the RNN. And that brings me to the conclusion, where I want to highlight that RNN wave functions can be used to detect topological order using the calculation of the topological entanglement entropy. We have also seen that RNN wave functions can find superpositions of different topological sectors, specifically superpositions of minimally entangled states. And we have also seen that RNNs are also good at encoding the area law, at least in two dimensions. And for the future, it will be interesting to extend this method for studying realistic systems such as Rydberg atoms arrays and trapped ions, namely like systems that can be simulated in the lab using either the framework of variational Monte Carlo or through the use of quantum state tomography using the data we get from the experiments. So that brings me to the end of this presentation. I hope that was helpful, and I look forward to your questions. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Mohammed. We have time for questions.
Thanks. Just a clarification question. The neural network, is it for the wave function or for the square?
So that's a great question. So what we do here, so is we, so since the models I have, the models that I introduced are stochastic, the ground state is actually positive. So which means that we can write the amplitude as the square root of a probability. So it's equivalent either way we model the probability of the amplitude.
But so if you had like some sign, then you
would... Yeah, that's a great point. So in this case, we can use what's called a complex RNN wave function that's already developed in this work, where we can add these phases so that we can take care of the sign. So, but for the moment, since just to simplify, we use these kind of RNNs over here. It's a great question. Yeah.
Look, yes. Yeah.
For entanglement entropy, how many samples do you need to estimate it, especially when system size goes up? And I guess it just depends on how you partition A and B, right?
Yeah, so if I understood correctly, the question is how many samples are needed for an accurate estimation of the entanglement entropies?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point. So at least for the sampling, we don't need a lot of samples. Like for the VMC optimization, typically that's around hundreds of samples. So we only need to estimate the entropy at the end of the optimization. So typically we need around millions of samples. That turns out to be enough for what we do. The thing I wanted to point out yet is that we still have some large error bars here. So there's still room for improvement in our experiments where we can use either a larger number of samples or use maybe some other improved estimators for the entanglement entropy. That's a great question. Yeah.
Thanks.
What's the status of implementing SU2 symmetry with RNN-based wave functions?
That's a great point. So far, like what I'm aware of is that we only have U1 symmetry for the RNNs. For the SU2, like that's something I look forward to, see if there's a way to do it. But for now, like I don't know if something that can be done by like maintaining the autoregressive feature of the RNN. There could be a way maybe to transform the basis that's compatible with SU2, but this is something that I haven't explored yet too much. But yeah, that's a great question. Like so far, like I don't think that there is a clear answer for implementing SU2 while maintaining the fact that RNNs are autoregressive. That's a great point. I mean, like, so if I understood correctly, that was for like by projecting, like.
Here, use a microphone. Nobody can hear you.
So the point is just that you need to transform your basis into the angular momentum basis, and then you're just coupling, these fusion diagrams. We did this with RBMs, but then they extended this to autoregressive as well. So this works really well in one dimension. Two dimension is a bit. More tricky, but yeah, instead of sampling in the asset basis, I guess like you're doing here, or in a spin basis, projected basis, you just sample the J's, let's say, themselves.
Yeah, so basically, yeah, we can need to transform to the J basis.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So you need to transform your Hamiltonian as well, and that becomes a bit the tricky part.
Yeah, we need to deal with the coefficients like Clebsch-Gordan coefficients, yeah. But I'm not sure if that's sufficient. Yeah, that would be great to see if that's scalable, like, or if it's can be efficiently trained. Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question.
Okay. No questions? And I think we have a coffee break now. We continue at 3:30. for this. Let's thank Mohammed again.
Thank you.